The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in today's podcast, we visit Carnival Village to see how preparations for the weekend's Notting Hill Carnival are coming along. Plus, Norman Jay tells us about his memories of Carnival and how his life changed after the riots there in 1976.
It filled me with a determination to take ownership of our event and show not only the police, not only the government, not only Middle England, but show the whole world that here we have something we can be proud of.
We'll be reviewing JW and Blaze, Flowers and Sea Creatures and Ahu in Singles Club. And continuing the Carnival theme, we've got a track from the Jamaican Mento band, the Jolly Boys too. That's all in Music Weekly. Hello, I'm back. I've been on holiday for 2 weeks, travelling around the country in a car with two small children, which was a stupid idea, and I've come back more exhausted and ill than I went. Anyway, thank you to Rosie for holding the fort for the last couple of weeks. It's now her turn to take a holiday, hopefully not in a car around Northumberland with two small children. So unfortunately, she won't be joining us this week, but fear not, I am joined once more by Emma Warren. Emma, how are you?
I'm really good, Alexis.
Excellent. What have you been doing? Anything exciting?
That's always the kind of question that sends me into a bit of a spin, because I seem to spend so much time focusing on what I'm doing right now that I actually can't remember what I did even yesterday.
Wow.
I'm a bit
good
confused.
Answer.
I'm a bit confused as well, because yesterday I went into my day job at Live Magazine when I don't normally. So even though today is the day it is, it feels like it was yesterday, if you know what I mean.
You're blowing my mind. I have literally no idea what you're talking about. That's good. That's all good. After his sterling performance a couple of weeks back, Dan Hancox is also back with us. Hello, Dan. Thank you very much for coming back in.
Hi, Alexis.
What have you been doing?
What have I been doing? Getting into the carnival spirit.
Have you? What does that involve? Drinking a lot of rum?
Mostly rum. Yeah. Rum, ginger, lime.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Good stuff. So, as you heard in the intro, it is something of a Notting Hill Carnival-themed show today. Europe's largest carnival will be held over this bank holiday weekend, and over 1 million people are expected to line the streets of West London to take in the tastes, colours and sounds of the festival. Now, coming up, we'll hear how preparations for this year's event are coming along as we visit Carnival Village at the Tabernacle in Westbourne Park. But first, DJ Norman Jay, or to give him his full title, Norman Jay MBE, tells us about his memories of Carnival and the origins of his Good Times sound system bus, one of the most popular and sort of evergreen attractions at the event.
The first carnival I really remember going to would probably have been about 1971 or 72, going with my parents and my uncles and aunts. And I can remember going reluctantly, and carnival to me just seemed like a chore. It's something that my mum and dad and my relatives went to. I never bothered with it for a few years, up until the summer of 1976, quite by default, because that August bank holiday weekend, I was with a load of friends who'd gone to Margate for the big Soul Boy gathering, Soul Boy and Punk gathering that was happening. And we were there from very early in the morning and encountered quite a lot of problems with skinheads and teddy boys. And there was quite a lot of violence, which resulted in us having to get out of town rather quick. And it kind of ruined our day. So we made a collective decision, we're all from West London, let's stop off at the carnival on the way home to see if we can salvage the remnants of the day. So we get off at Shepherd's Bush and we walk back up Holland Park Avenue towards Nightingale. And as we turned, we saw quite a lot of people walking the opposite way, leaving. So when we got over the hill at the top of Ladbroke Grove, in the far distance, we could see people running. Being young and fearless, we ran towards. As we were coming down the hill, we were actually behind the police, and we realised they were running towards us, carrying dustbin lids and stuff, trying to protect themselves. And they ran straight past us. By that time, they were like a seething mob, and we quickly sussed the situation, what was happening. So, of course, we joined in. In the previous couple of years building up to that, loads of my friends were really being harassed by the police, myself included. And I saw myself as pretty law-abiding. I hadn't been in trouble, not been in jail. And to be harassed, on the streets of where I was living then, in Acton and Ealing, continually, for no reason. You know, the police would arbitrarily pull up, call you all the racist names under the sun, as they did in on one particular occasion, and I couldn't believe really what I was experiencing. To me, straight away, I just saw them as fascist oppressors, you know, brutal fascist oppressors. You know, and I wasn't going to just idly stand by, you know, and this time I'm 16, I'm 17. I'm right. The police were taking over Carnival. You know, they were trying to impress upon us that however many black people came on the streets that weekend, there'd be more of them. So it really was, it really broke down that weekend into a them and us situation. They weren't frightened, they weren't intimidated by you, that they could physically manhandle you, hit you with impunity, and we wouldn't hit back. That was the weekend they discovered to their cost that we were going to strike back, and we did. Well, you know, what came out of that was, you know, a massive positive for myself. It filled me with a determination to take ownership of our event and show not only the police, not only the government, not only Middle England, but show the whole world that here we have something we can be proud of. This is a window into our culture, the Afro-Caribbean experience in the UK, that we're not all hooligans, we're not all muggers, we're not all rioters, we're not all anti-police, we're not all anti-white people. From that little acorn is where good times come from.
Well, I am Shabaka Thompson, Chief Executive of Carnival Village. Had a stint 1 year of running Notting Hill Carnival, been very involved in the governance and the operations of the Calypso tent and Calypso generally in this country. It's the only festival that allows people to take the streets in a way that we take the streets over. The Carnival symbolizes a sense of freedom, a sense of what we would call letting off or an opportunity. Of 365 days a year to let off some stress. It also allows the communities to come together, cut across race, class, all divides. More importantly, it is about the Caribbean presence in this country and being able to engage and allow others to engage in something that has become an icon of Britain. And to show that we, as a people, are creative, productive, and we can contribute to the cultural landscape of London. People come for different reasons. There's the static songs in the middle. There's the food. People come for food. People come to see the parade. People come to meet friends, you know. So there's always something to do in Carnival. But we are hoping that one day we could put the Carnival in a space where the 60 other million people who want to come and see and enjoy the spectacle could see it. And we would hope that soon that could be in the making.
My name's Matthew Phillip. I'm the manager of the Mangrove Steel Band that we're based at the Tabernacle in Notting Hill. At the moment, we're getting ready for Notting Hill Carnival 2010, so there's costumes being prepared in our mass camp. This year's theme is Chain Gang. So it's like a prisoner's theme. The history of Carnival is always, you know, and the origins were always kind of mocking things, so it's not a literal thing. We're kind of exaggerated what we do with the costumes. And the steel band's also rehearsing every evening for 5 to 6 hours.
I am Shirley McDavid, and I'm the coordinator of the camp. So I shall now give you a tour of what we will be wearing on the road for Carnival Monday. This one is called the Meltdown. There's 15 in this section, so we have 15 of these butterflies. Once you know how to sew and cut, do pattern cutting, I think it's not really hard. It looks harder than it is, really. This will be the Queen Butterfly. The performer for this is Merle Blondell. It's not very heavy. She puts it on. And she dances around in it like if she just have a normal backpack. You know, we build it in such a way, you wear it, you're able to dance in it, you're able to walk in it for long hours. So it has to be comfortable as well. This is what, 15 feet in the air and probably 30 feet wide.
There's been so many tracks that I've inserted into the final three, the finale three. Starting with number three, would have to be House of Pain's Jump Around. I mean, in some quarters it's perceived as cheesy, but I don't really care because, you know, we've never been influenced by the perceptions or what people have to say about those records. All we know are the tracks that work for us and our crowd. And I can remember when I first revived it, I have to confess I'd never seen scenes like that before. The whole street was jumping as one. And it's become a staple. I've been loved playing The Clash, Rock the Casbah. It's been another good times staple. Loretta Holloway's Runaway. Yes, I'm gonna mess around, 'cause that's the way I want to be. I'm gonna try to get it down before I let love get to me. The Police have let us play one more. Thanks very much, people. Thanks very much to The Police. My own remix of Doom's Night, it was rejected by the record company because of the sample usage, which got my back up a little bit. So I told them, you watch what happens with this record when I play it. And believe me, you know, there was like an earthquake around the bus. Again, you know, exactly the same scenes, people just completely losing it, you know, in the chaos of sound and celebration and euphoria.
Joey and Norman Jay on the mix. Pure pandemonium, chaos around the bus.
Norman Jay and the people of Carnival Village are speaking there. I've never been to Notting Hill Carnival. I'm not a great one for kind of like huge crowds in fairly narrow streets. You know, that's my sort of thing. I'm a little bit sort of agoraphobic / claustrophobic. You, obviously, Emma and Dan, you've both been. Mm-hmm. What do you like about it? Emma, you first.
Carnival. I think carnival is a real high point of the year for me. Mm-hmm. It's something that I always try and make time to go to. I've missed some over the last however long I've been going, but not loads. For a long time, I used to always go to Good Times.
Yeah.
And the really good thing about Good Times was that during a time when carnival was still a little bit, certainly had the perception of being a little bit other and possibly a bit dangerous.
Yeah.
It really opened up carnival to those suburban kids that were into music but didn't quite know if they could, in inverted commas, go. Certainly that was the case for me. And kind of Good Times is right on the edge of carnival, so you could literally go from the tube station to Good Times without going into anything else.
Sure.
But it would be a real tragedy if you only stayed there because you had Abashanti around the corner, which is my personal favourite carnival place.
Really? What do you like about Abashanti? This is kind of heavy dub kind of roots.
Extraordinarily heavy dub. Very, very hardcore dub, basically. Mm-hmm. He still does nights all over the place. He's kind of like up there with Jar Shaka in terms of sort of UK sound system culture.
Wicked.
You know, the Dons, basically.
Yeah,
and very, very heavy. And you go there and, you know, hours could pass without you realising that anything had happened because you're just kind of like, you're in the speakers, basically.
Apart from your rib cage vibrating, yeah.
Dan, what about you? What's your sort of favourite thing?
I mean, for me, the best thing about carnival is the fact that it spreads its wings beyond those rather crowded streets of West London, and the fact that throughout London, a city of 10 million people, you can tell it's carnival weekend.
Sure.
All over. There are, you know, the propensity of people to drive with, you know, the top down, should they have one on their car, or just be blaring kind of, you know, the latest Mavado song out of their car. You can tell many miles away that it's carnival weekend, and it's reflected in the fact that you have club nights and sort of live performances for the duration of that long weekend throughout London, which are reflecting that. You'll see that, you know, the posters are up everywhere at the moment. It's the fact that it influences beyond Notting Hill, but encapsulates something that is much wider than London, even.
No, I understand what you're saying. What's your sort of favourite thing to do at carnival? Emma goes and loses herself in the eerie sounds of the Abashanti sound system. What are you doing while she's
getting lost, mostly. Yeah,
really.
I'm not brilliant at finding my way, or indeed having a plan, but I think that's why you should avoid having a plan.
But the thing is, you can't really wander anymore. I was talking to a friend of mine, Jason Goss, who runs Transition Mastering down in Forest Hill, about carnival, and he's saying he doesn't really go anymore because you can't go right when you want to go right, you can't go left when you want to go left. You basically have to, you know, follow the carnival
route. Go with the flow.
Which, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not really a big fan of controlling spaces like that because I think that's part of the sort of beauty of them, really, that they are quite anarchic spaces. And generally, they're pretty much well self-controlled. You don't really need kind of organisational groups to tell you where to go. I mean, it does mean that you lose the risk of getting caught in a big jump up down your Saints Road, but to be honest, I quite like that.
I think we miss that anarchy elsewhere in our public life as well, just sort of spontaneous kind of celebrations like that. I mean, I love the fact there was a reference to a Soul Boy and Punk Week gathering in Margate. I had no idea that kind of thing used to happen, or that, you know, certainly you wouldn't get subcultural groups travelling down to Margate en masse now for a big rave up.
I'm sure you would, though.
I'm sure you would. Probably Soul Boys, I'd imagine, would still go down to Margate.
Definitely. I thought the thing that was most interesting about what Norman Jay, was one of the most interesting things that Norman Jay said then, was the fact that he was showing kind of Middle England and the police a different side of black culture in the UK.
Yeah, like what Jamaican, what West Indians could do.
He also did was he kind of took on certainly sound system culture and reggae culture, and to a certain extent kind of what was expected of DJs who were working on sound systems at that time, because he was playing different music. He wasn't playing reggae. And when the sound systems first came over in the kind of sort of like late 50s, early 60s, they pretty much, I mean, Lloyd Bradley, the reggae writer, describes them as coming over in aspic, and so you just had to do it like it was done in Jamaica. So for him, playing kind of funk and soul, which was his main love, was considered pretty renegade and really not done, and he really had to struggle quite hard to do what he wanted to do, and attracted quite a lot of grief for doing it as well. So I'm not saying he's perfect. I personally think playing House of Pain once is an amazing idea, and playing it every year becomes kind of predictable.
But I think that's kind of the great thing about Norman Jay is that as a DJ, whenever I've seen him DJ, you know, it's not about kind of educating the crowd. It's not one of the, I'm going to take you on a journey. He's like a real party. And so the best set I ever saw him do was at a junior boy's own party, Christmas party, about 15 years ago. And in the middle of the evening, you know, rather than play kind of the hot new house track or whatever, he played Superstition by Stevie Wonder, which you could say is a fairly cheesy tune, and it tore the roof off in a way that I've never seen anything tear the roof off before. And I actually really like that about him. I really like the fact that, you know what I mean, his big tunes for Carnival are things like Jump Around or Rock the Casbah, you know, The Clash. It gets quite a cliched Carnival thing to play The Clash, I guess.
I mean, I generalise that spirit across sort of a lot of bashment and dancehall DJs as well, that, and selectors. There isn't that pressure to be playing sort of, you know, obscure or exclusive dubs or B-sides or whatever. Some of my favourite DJs in London at the moment are the Heatwave Collective, and without fail every one of their raves, and I think they're playing this weekend and about seven times across Carnival, will feature every Big Vibes Cartel, Movado, Signal tune, and not sort of not flinch on going for the obvious ones, which just leads to a great party atmosphere.
Wicked. Well, the 46th Notting Hill Carnival is held this bank holiday. If you do fancy going along, it's worth visiting the Notting Hill Carnival, all one word, .com, for information on how to get there, as various tube stations are closed on the day. Time for Singles Club now.
Public service.
I was going to say, after that public service announcement. Yeah. Time for Singles Club now. The three of us have each brought a track in for discussion, and this week I think we'll start off with my choice. That was At Night by Flowers and Sea Creatures. Interesting band, or duo, whatever they are, Flowers and Sea Creatures. They sent a demo of sort of instrumental dance stuff to Ben Watt's label, Buzzing Fly. And he sort of went back to them kind of on the hoof and said, you know, any of you sing by any chance? Because I think these tracks work really well as kind of vocal tracks. And it turned out this guy could sing a bit like Tom York. And the result is a really interesting, I think, EP. That track's produced by The Revenge, the new disco producers, and the track produced by Ewan Pearson, I don't know how you describe his sound, but a friend of the show, anyway, Ewan Pearson. I really like it. I think it's got a lovely sort of nocturnal, weird, disjointed 4 a.m. kind of vibe about it. Emma.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see this as part of a generalised kind of re-Balearicisation of the world.
That is a great point,
Gemma. Oh, no,
I've
just made up a terrible new word, sorry. But, you know, Balearic's kind of been there on the outskirts of sort of music interest and was very niche for a very long time. Mm. But it seems like for a while there's been a kind of increasing interest in Balearic.
Yeah.
And people not just looking back to the kind of Balearic heydays of, I guess, late 80s, early 90s, but kind of really taking that sort of European, slightly druggy but kind of quite cute, folksy, oddball fusion of sort of disco and electronic music and anything else they kind of cared to throw into the Balearic pot. And making some really interesting new music with it. Mm-hmm. I was saying there's quite a lot of good stuff coming out of Canada as well. There's an outfit called Azari. I don't know if you call them Three or Line, Line, Line. Probably not Line, Line, Line.
I would have thought it was Line, Line, Line. No, but anyway.
Them anyway. And they're really cool. And they're sort of like, kind of almost like Chicago house revisionists.
There's a lot of that about at the moment, isn't there? There's a lot of stuff.
I tell you what, this is making me very happy. I'm redrawing for my Jack Tracks album with a lot of pleasure at the moment.
Cool. Dan, what did you make of the Flowers and Seeds?
I was a bit confused by the sort of description by the aforementioned label boss as it being a cross between Kraftwerk and Crosby,
Stills,
and
Nash.
Yes,
I thought that was a bit of an odd comparison.
To me, it sounded, and this is why I have a bit of a problem with it, it sounded a bit like Radiohead collaborating with Thom Yorke. Like, it didn't, you know, on a Radiohead cover or something. It was the vocal, I think, that just put me off.
It does sound
like
Thom Yorke.
A bit too Thom Yorke for my liking, which is just a personal bugbear I've been trying to work through for a number of years. And it's never really going to happen. Otherwise, yeah, brooding and dark and quite interesting. But again, it was labelled as future disco, and I'm fed up of things being called future.
Be labelled future disco, I've noticed. Now,
is that allowed?
I just think that if you look in, if you get like the mail out from Fonica or Juno, which is how I do my record shopping these days, the section that's now labelled disco, but it's everything in it, you know what I mean? It seems to be a catch-all title for sort of Balearic stuff and things that don't remotely sound like disco, and loads of old disco re-edits and loads of weird electronic records that pool along at like 90 BPM or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's sort of catch-all term. At Night by Flowers and Sea Creatures is out on September the 20th on Buzzing Fly. Let's next have a listen to Emma's Choice. Great, I thought. That was To Love by Ahu. Tell us a little bit about Ahu.
Well, she's Turkish. Mm-hmm. She's a singer and DJ and apparently a yoga instructor as well. I think she's like quite big
news. Polymath.
Yeah, I think she's quite big news in Istanbul, which is where she's from. I really love the record. I just think it's really beautiful and soporific and kind of soulful in that kind of slightly sort of time deranged kind of way where everything's a little bit slower than it really is and it feels very lulled. And I just think it's a beautiful record, and I think it'll actually be massive. You know, you were talking earlier, Dan, about the sort of like things that surround Carnival, things like Benji B's Deviation Night, which happens monthly, but that's what they're doing, a Carnival party. I can imagine it, you know, really hearing it there. I also think there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the kind of what you might call sort of soul, London soulful underground. I mean, obviously there's heritage there with things like Young Disciples and other stuff, but it's quite difficult for sort of UK soul artists or soulful artists to get it right. But another thing that I thought was interesting about this is there's a link, the label's called One Handed Records, and the record was co-made with Paul White, who's a kind of instrumental hip-hop, slightly psychedelic guy, another very, very interesting producer. But they're all kind of linked by a night called CDR, which happens on a monthly basis in London, I think elsewhere in the UK as well, where producers get to come down and play their music sort of unfinished.
Off CDR, right, okay.
Off CDR, and it's kind of all DJ'd, but you hear it on a really fantastic sound system. And maybe there's something about that and about, there's a guy called Alexander Nutt who has a show on Rinse FM. And I listen to a lot of Pirates, and usually, you know, although Pirates are amazing, you pretty much know what you're going to get. You're going to get tearing sort of drum and bass, or you're going to get some garage or whatever. But I heard his show, and it was all music like that.
Wow.
I actually did have to stop my car and go, oh, what's happening here? So anyway, I just think we should be kind of keeping our ears open for more music like this, but this is just beautiful.
Dan, do you sorry, I interrupted you. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say it's weird and mesmerizing, and yeah, I completely agree. It's sort of captivating, isn't it?
It doesn't really sound like anything else.
No, quite. Which is good. I don't know if that's a Korg or whatever it is that Paul White's using, but he's done something weird to it, and it sounds sort of ghostly and ethereal, and yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, quite a sort of retro vibe in its own way. You could imagine it soundtracking the... what's it called? Look Around You, the sort of 1970s kind of spoof program.
Yes, it seems to me to be pitched somewhere sort of sonically between, to use a very, very unfashionable phrase that comes up, you know, trip hop. But I mean, there were loads and loads of absolutely fantastic records made under that, you know, or not, under that kind of banner in around 1994, 95, the early Mowax things, stuff like that. And that kind of weird Boards of Canada, Plone, those kind of like electronica artists that were definitely drawing on that sort of thing, that kind of Look Around You
and
vibe.
Broadcast as well. Absolutely. I mean, really sort of echoes of a sort of imagined kind of electronic past.
Absolutely, which, yeah. No, I think that's a really interesting point, actually. I think that's good. Well, I really like that. To Love by Ahu. It's out on September the 13th, my birthday. That's the most important thing about September the 13th. We're going to swerve back towards Carnival now with this choice from Dan. 1, 2, 3, 4.
We don't care about the recession. All we want to do is have fun. Jumping up in the blazing sun.
Blimey. That was Palance by JW and Blaze. That sounds like the music that plays in my four-year-old daughter's head the minute she wakes up first thing in the morning. That's exactly what she's like. Tell us a bit about JW and Blaze. Tell us a bit about this track, please, Dan.
Sure. It's difficult to sit down and listen to that song.
It certainly is, yes. Yeah,
which is a testament to sort of its qualities, in my opinion. I've taken some soundings from some knowledgeable people in London, more knowledgeable than me, and this is apparently the tune of Carnival 2010, which is ostensibly why I brought it in. It came out earlier in the year in its Trinidadian soca tune. And it won, crucially, apparently this is a big deal, I'm not an expert in soca, but it won the 2010 Trinidad and Tobago Power Monarch Finals, in which like the tune of Carnival is voted for through
a very complicated
system. I don't know if they use PR, but it got 81 points.
This sounds amazing. This sounds like a sort of soca Eurovision kind of thing.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I only just sort of worked this out this morning, unfortunately. Otherwise, I would have looked into what the kind of criteria are for accruing points. But yeah, it was the clear winner, and you can tell why. It's just absolutely just effervescent in its joyousness. Mm. There was a line there, we don't care about the recession, all we want to do is have fun, which reminded me of an episode of London Tonight I saw about a year and a half ago after the Lehman Brothers crash. Bear with me on this. In which they speculated in a little mini featurette as to whether the looming recession was going to lead to a kind of resurgence in kind of glum. Mm. I mean, they played Ghost Town, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
Because you have to. And, you know, what the artistic ramifications of the recession were. Well, I think this is the correct response.
I think that's a really interesting point, because I was looking at the charts the week that Ghost Town was number one, and everyone always goes, "Oh, it's an amazing moment," and the mood of Britain as Britain blazed.
Social realism.
And if you look at the rest of the chart, it's like number two is like Hooked on Classics, and number three is Bad Manners cover of the Can Can. So you know, it's sort of fairly amazing. Emma, what did you make of JW and Blaze?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. I think it's great as well to have the Trinidadian roots of Carnival kind of represented here, because we always think of Carnival as being Caribbean. Obviously, Trinidad is in the Caribbean, but we think about, I suppose, more about a Jamaican.
We think about it as Jamaican, yeah.
But obviously, it's a Trinidadian thing, and this is a Trinidadian tune. I love the fact as well that Palance is made up of three different words. It's like a made-up word, isn't it? And the middle part of it is liming. And I couldn't quite work out what that meant until I realised it was probably the same as the UK equivalent of jamming, which means to, like, hang out. Mm. So I like the fact that in different places across the world, we're liming and jamming. But, yeah, it's an absolutely massive tune. Although I asked someone as I left the live office today, the magazine run by Under 21, was where I work 3 days a week. So I asked someone as I left the office what they thought the tune of Carnival was going to be, and they said they thought it was going to be Mr. M Dashdown, which sounds like a kind of reversioning of Funky D's Are You Gonna Bang Doe, which apparently was... last year, the big carnival tune.
Wow.
In which Mr. M threatens to dash down lots of different people with a slightly different context, whether he's talking about women or men.
Wow.
You heard it all here first. This is all. Never let it be said that this is not an educational program. I had no idea about either of those records. I had no idea about JW and Blaze. Palance, I mean, I being a man who mostly stays at home with his children, I find it difficult to imagine the circumstances in which I would put this on at home.
That Cookie Monster features in the video.
The video is amazing.
It's so brilliant. Is it on YouTube?
It is.
Go there. Go and check that video out on YouTube. That sounds fantastic. It's obviously out now. Palance by JW and Blaze. That is your lot, people, for Singles Club. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave feedback for us. Barretta has got the hump. You can't call this blog Music Weekly if it only covers a very narrow spectrum of the art. Well, I tell you, listen to that record we just played, mate, and tell me that's covering a narrow spectrum of the art. It implies that this kind of music is the only real music and nothing else deserves the title. I think that's really true. Which is extremely arrogant, just like the rubric in the Friday supplement, which only ever discusses pop music as if that were what the word music means. If its scope cannot be expanded, it should not be called Music Weekly. Huh. On Alex De Kid's Fast Rise, SV80 writes... Alex the Kid has a great story. There are always calls for cuts to creative and technical courses, especially at relatively low prestige institutions like Thames Valley University. But he's a perfect example of how much potential we might be failing to capitalise on if the government took that route. A huge number of young musicians and producers have come up through the degree / HND path. Creatively and arguably financially, it would be absurd to restrict further access. And Kebabette writes, enjoyed your descriptions of woozy, spooky nature down in the mix singers. Pretty on the money. I'm a lover of the slow down / sped up oddness of music from the days when we would play mum and dad's LPs on 45 to make them sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Slowed downness makes things sound so ominous and Germanic. Touch Me by Sam Fox, slow down to 33, is a nasty militaristic throb. Lovely.
I'm gonna do that when I get home. That just sounds, I know, amazing.
I tell you what, I the other day I heard a record by Sam Fox that I was unaware of that came out shortly after Touch Me, and it's called Hurt Me / But the Pants Stay On. What an amazing name for a record.
Sam Fox is well Balearic.
She is totally Balearic. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Thanks as ever for all your feedback. Keep it coming, please. Performing at this year's carnival are Jamaican institution The Jolly Boys. While the West Indies are known for reggae and ska, Jamaican folk music, known as mento, is the sound which sort of preceded both of those. And The Jolly Boys have been entertaining crowds with mento for 60 years. They have a new album out on Wall of Sound in September, so we thought we'd get them in to perform a track for us. This is their track. This is called Waterboy.
Water boy, dig dig. Don't stop till you reach the water. Dig a water boy, dig dig. Don't stop till you reach the water. Dig a water boy, dig dig. Don't stop till you draw the water. Don't stop trying. Love will come if you do your duty. Don't stop trying. Perseverance will make you conquer. Dig a water boy, dig dig. Don't stop till you reach the water. Dig a water boy, dig dig. She never missed the water until her well run dry. She never missed the water until her well run dry. Man, dig a water boy, dig dig. Little, blink, blink, blink.
blink, 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 blink. Digga, 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 misty water, boy. 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 Digga, misty I dig in, I dig a misty water boy, dig ding, dig a misty water boy, dig ding.
All right, indeed. That was Waterboy by the Jolly Boys. Interesting state of affairs with the Jolly Boys. Kind of an attempt by Wall of Sound, the renowned dance and other kinds of music label, to sort of popularise Mento in Britain, like 50 years after the event, which seems an incredible kind of thing to do. And I think it's interesting that this music is sort of so unknown over here. I think it's testament to how sort of all-conquering reggae and ska were as genres, that nobody bothered to look further back, you know. Nobody bothered to look what came before. You hardly ever hear about the fact that sound systems used to play R&B before they, you know, play Fats Domino records and stuff before they, before ska was invented. What do we make of it? Dan, do you like it?
I do, a great deal. I mean, I'm a complete newcomer to it, but but in the, you know, short amount of research I've done and listening and readings, I'm completely in love with it. And I can see why they would think that it was worth salvaging and worth presenting to a completely new audience who'd been hitherto, like, ignoring it. It's... You can see it's a kind of Vogue-ish equivalent to, in the same way that Buena Vista Social Club is the obvious comparison, became, you know, the hit of every coffee table in the land. There's no reason why this shouldn't either. I mean, and people, you know, it reminds me a bit of bluegrass as well, to my sort of fairly ignorant ears. And similarly, the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack became popular, you know, way beyond the sort of very specific demographic of people that go to the world music section in sort of record
Absolutely,
shops,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, why not? I mean, it's a shame it's so late in the,
in the Jolly Boys' career. Yeah, yeah, they've been playing in hotels, apparently. That was sort of bread and butter, you know, as a kind of, I guess, a kind of tourist thing, you know. Mm. Yeah, probably was a tourist thing, wasn't it, Alexis? Bearing in mind it was in a hotel. But, you know, presenting a bit of West Indian culture to the tourists. There was a compilation of old-fashioned Mento that came out a few years ago called Take Me to Jamaica. I think Pressure Sounds might have put it out. One of those kind of reggae reissue labels, but it was obviously a bit further back. Emma, what did you make of the Jolly Boys?
Well, I fully agree with you that it's really good to see Jamaican music culture being represented a little bit more fully, rather than just focusing on sort of golden age reggae a little bit further back, and then sort of obviously onwards as reggae has mutated and changed.
Yeah.
Because obviously it has been so hugely influential on UK music culture in a way that's almost impossible to quantify. So I think it's great to go a little bit further back and to show a kind of slightly broader picture of Jamaican music and music heritage. So I fully agree with you on that. We also had Albert from the Jolly Boys come down to Live magazine so we could do a feature, because we thought it'd be interesting to get him to meet up with some of the kids down at Live and for them to take him to some Jamaican hotspots in Brixton.
Oh, right.
That's a bit of a culture clash, and he'd never been to Brixton before.
Right.
So we took him to Windrush Square, whereupon we got abused by some crackheads. Quickly moved on to Black Adred record shops, where we kind of told the guys in the shop who he was, and then they had a really nice little conversation.
That
was really cool. And then we took him down to Take Two, which is the kind of the spot to get your jerk chicken. And the guys were all chatting to him, and they were like all kind of hollering out to him and calling him like the king of reggae and how, you know, like the godfather of everything. And it was really cool seeing that kind of, you know, huge difference in, you know, the girls that who'd came to do the interview were like 15. Didn't know anything about him at all. And he was visiting kind of Brixton as almost like a Jamaican outpost. And it was really cool. And he's a very nice man, and he's about 74 and very raffish looking as well. Kind of had a nice hat and dapper green
suit.
Kind
of older generation of Jamaicans, incredibly sharply dressed kind of dudes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's an brilliant. Awesome feature idea.
It's a great idea.
The idea that there was a 60-year age gap between the person writing and the person and the interviewee, that can't happen very often. It should happen more, though.
I really like the idea, as you say, of the other thing it's sort of reminded me of, although I suppose sonically it's not that similar, was those London Is the Place for Me albums that came out on Honest John's a few years ago, which was music made by the first generation of, I mean, the people, you know, fresh off the Windrush sort of thing. And it was kind of The first volume in particular is absolutely astonishing.
Wow, I've never, I don't know about that at
it's
all.
It's amazing. I mean, very few albums, I would just go to anybody, you should hear this. Basically, they're records by Calypso singers and things like that that came over to Britain. And they start out, the initial ones were songs they wrote like on the boat over. And the actual song London Is the Place for Me is amazing and paints this unbelievably rosy picture of what it's going to be like in Britain. And he's going to go and live in Hampton Court and all this kind of thing. And by the end of the album, they've been here a few years and they're writing all these songs called Bulldog, Don't Bite Me and stuff like that. Mm. And it's just amazing piece of like lost social history. I can't recommend it.
And it's not just Lord Kitchener then?
And Lord Kitchener's on it, but there's loads of other guys. Yeah. We did a feature on it in The Guardian a few years ago and we found one dude still alive, was like 91. Wow. And was in some old people's home somewhere in Enfield or something like that. Yeah. But it's an amazing, amazing record. Check them out, check the Jolly Boys out as well. Great Expectations is out on September the 13th. Just to remind you once again, that's my birthday. On Wall of Sound. You can watch the boys perform another track recorded at Guardian Towers by visiting guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. It's an Amy Winehouse cover. Mm. And well worth checking out. That's all for this week. Thank you very much for coming in, Emma.
Pleasure.
Lovely to see you. Always a pleasure, never a chore. And thank you, Dan. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Alexis.
I hope good to see fun. Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I felt a really educative programme, he said, rather smugly and pleased with himself. I hope to see you again soon. Thanks, as ever, to our long-suffering producer, Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis. See you next week. And don't forget to check out that Jolly Boys video on our website in the meantime. Ta-ra.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.